Welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Leslie Hunt, your volunteer broadcaster, and you are listening to East Valley News for Queen Creek and Santan. So if you're ready, I've got some articles. Let's get going. First article today is Both Sides Win, Lose, and EVIT Decision. This was posted in the Santan Sun News and written by Paul Mareniak, Arizonian Executive Editor, June 30th, 2026. A Maricopa County Superior Court judge handed both the East Valley Institute of Technology and nine of its member school districts significant victories June 30th in their bitter fight over millions in state funding for career and technical education, CTE, programs. While ruling the districts cannot use some of the $50 million in state CTE funding for anything they want, Judge Christopher Corey also said EVIT lacks the authority to control how districts spend those funds after they are deposited into district accounts. But while Corey's 15-page opinion resolves two major legal questions that have fueled the increasingly bitter dispute between EVIT and nine East Valley school districts over the management of CTE funding, it still leaves hundreds of students who attend EVIT's two Mesa campuses in the lurch. That's because transportation was not part of the lawsuit. The districts have rejected EVIT's offer to pay up to $4 million in costs for transporting juniors and seniors to the Mesa campuses 5 half-days a week. EVIT subsequently asked them to give access to bus service on their campuses that it would arrange. It also asked if the districts would excuse those students so they could attend the Mesa classes. The districts have not responded to that request, for which EVIT set a June 29th deadline. EVIT also said in a release that without a new intergovernmental agreement, IGA, the nine districts that sued it, quote, will not receive additional CTED funding for their vocational programs until an agreement is reached, end quote. EVIT is one of 14 CTE districts, CTED, in Arizona. The districts that filed suit are Apache Junction, Cave Creek, Chandler, Fountain Hills, Gilbert, Higley, J.O. Combs, Queen Creek, and Tempe Union. We are grateful to the court for taking the time and the effort to sort out a very complicated issue regarding school finances and CTED funds, said EVIT Superintendent Dr. Chad Wilson. Unfortunately, this ruling does not provide clarity for the upcoming school year. Students and parents should not be leveraged in a legal dispute. That's why our offer for transportation still stands. The districts issued a joint statement claiming victory, stating the judge, quote, rejected EVIT's core legal argument that districts can only spend vocational education funds on EVIT-approved courses. The court was unambiguous. EVIT was wrong. The districts were right. The statement did not address the ongoing dispute over busing students to EVIT campuses. Instead, the districts focused on a portion of the judge's ruling that said they can use their state funds to expand any CTE programming for students, whether or not EVIT has sanctioned it. The district's satellite programs enroll somewhere around 26,000 students. Rather than siding entirely with either party, Corey concluded that Arizona law imposes meaningful restrictions on how districts may spend money deposited in their Fund 596 accounts. But he also ruled that that does not give EVIT sweeping authority to oversee district finances or require districts to obtain EVIT approval before using those funds. He also took a swipe against the law that set up CTEDs in the first place, calling it, quote, poorly drafted, and, end quote, and citing, quote, the need for a positive future legislative correction, end quote. Quote, when passed, it very well may have been the intention of the legislature to create a system where funds were restricted and earmarked for CTE only, end quote, he wrote. Quote, that, however, is not what the statute provides, end quote. Corey declared, quote, "The district's suggestion that monies deposited in Fund 596 accounts can be used for anything without any limitation is unsupported by Arizona law," end quote. At the same time, he rejected Evett's central legal argument that Fund 596 money may be spent only on EVIT-approved career and technical education courses. Quote, ARS 15-393D7 does not restrict a district's use of money in its Fund 596 account to only EVIT-approved courses, end quote, the judge wrote. The districts filed the lawsuit last fall after negotiations between EVIT and nine member districts broke down over how CTEO funding passed through EVIT to its member districts should be allocated and what authority EVIT retained over money distributed to district CTE programs on their high school campuses. The districts contended EVIT offered less money and wanted more control over its programs. Stating the pass-through funds, quote, remain restricted public funds and cannot be diverted to unrelated district purposes, end quote, the judge said. Quote, a district cannot freely use funds from these accounts for any purpose whatsoever, end quote. However, he also ruled that the statute distinguishes between career and technical education approved through a CTE district and broader vocational education programs offered independently by school districts. That distinction, he concluded, means districts may use Fund 596 money to supplement either category of vocational education. He said the districts must first meet requirements requiring districts to continue funding their existing vocational education programs before using state dollars to expand them. The ruling also addressed EVIT's claimed authority over district spending. EVIT argued that CTED governing boards have broad authority over CTE and that they have authority to manage district spending for those programs. Corey disagreed. Quote, EVIT has no authority to manage or control the programming or curriculum of the non-CTE vocational education offered by a school district, end quote, he wrote. Quote, nor does this authority encompass a district's finances or auditing or controlling Fund 596 account expenditures once funds have been deposited into each district's Fund 596 account, unless expressly provided for in an IGA, end quote. The judge concluded EVIT retains authority over the content, curriculum, and quality of career and technical education courses approved through the CTED system. But he denied its power over district financial decisions involving vocational education outside that system. Although much of the ruling limits EVIT's authority, Corey also cautioned districts against using Fund 596 money to solve broader budget problems. EVIT alleged that some districts had shifted historical expenditures into Fund 596 accounts through revised accounting practices. While declining to rule on those allegations because they were unnecessary to resolve the legal questions before him, Corey nevertheless agreed with EVIT's broader position regarding the purpose of the money. Quote, the court agrees with EVIT, money in Fund 596 accounts are intended to expand and supplement vocational, career, and technical education programming for students rather than being used as a proverbial piggy bank to mitigate historical or structural defects in a school district's budget, end quote. Because Corey rejected EVIT's interpretation of the governing statute, he also denied EVIT's request for a preliminary injunction that would have immediately restricted district spending. Quote, EVIT has failed to demonstrate a strong likelihood of success on the merits, end quote, he concluded. The court ultimately entered four declarations. Fund 596 money is restricted and cannot be spent for unrelated purposes. Those funds may be used only for career and technical education or vocational education purposes. Districts must first meet statutory maintenance of effort requirements before using 596 money. EVIT governs career and technical education curriculum and quality, but does not control district finances or fund 596 expenditures unless that authority is specifically granted through an intergovernmental agreement. Despite resolving the principal legal questions, Corey made clear the litigation does not determine how the remaining disputed 4% of this year's funding should be divided. Quote, that issue was not framed by the pleadings, end quote, he wrote. Quote, moreover, the decision about how to allocate these funds is not a judicial decision, but instead is reserved to the negotiations between EVIT and the districts, end quote. The judge directed the parties to submit a proposed final judgment by July 15th with any objections due by July 27th. EVIT's statement after the ruling was issued is that it is still reviewing it for a possible appeal. End of story. Our next story is entitled Write-In Candidate Donna Hallman Enters Santan Valley's First Town Council Election. This was posted in the Santan Valley News and santanvalley.com June 25th, 2026. No author is listed. Donna Hallman, a longtime Santan Valley area resident and small business owner, is running as a write-in candidate for the town of Santan Valley's first elected town council in the July 21st primary. She is one of 10 candidates seeking the council's 7 seats. 8 candidates appear on the printed ballot, and 2, Hallman and Paul Montes, are running as write-ins, meaning voters must add their names to the ballot by hand. Who Donna Hallman is? Hallman is an Arizona native who has lived in the Santan Valley area since 1995, when the community was in its early days. She is a longtime small business owner with a background in the insurance industry. For years, she lived on a horse property in the area before later moving into a subdivision. From opposing incorporation to running for council, Hallman did not support incorporating Santan Valley as a town, and she says she did not sign petitions for the effort. Her main concern, she says, was for the area's horse and ranch property owners, many of whom were left outside the new town's boundary. After voters approved incorporation, Hallman says she decided to get involved rather than stay on the sidelines. She began attending town council meetings, taking part in the town's public hearings and zoning workshops, and was recently appointed to the town of Santan Valley Planning and Zoning Commission. Hallman entered the council race late and aimed to qualify for the printed ballot, but two things kept her from gathering enough petition signatures in time. The governor moved the filing deadline up by 2 weeks, and Hallman fell seriously ill in early March, developing sepsis that pulled her off the campaign trail. With the shorter window and her illness, she was unable to finish collecting signatures. She filed as a write-in candidate before the deadline after the town clerk's office explained that a write-in run was still possible. Why the July 21st primary matters. For most offices, a primary only narrows the field, and the real choice comes in November. The town of Santan Valley council race works differently. A candidate can win a seat outright in the July 21st primary by earning enough votes to cross a set threshold. That threshold depends on how many people vote. The total number of votes cast is divided by the number of seats, then divided in half and rounded up. Any candidate who reaches that number is elected in July with no need to go to November. An example, if turnout produced a threshold of about 1,143 votes, any candidate reaching 1,143 or more would win a seat. The exact figure will not be known until the votes are counted. If seats remain after the primary, the top remaining candidates advance to a runoff in the November 3rd general election. Because all 7 seats are on the ballot and a seat can be won in July, the primary is the point where much of this election may be decided. Every council member now serving was appointed. This is the first time Santan Valley voters elect their town council. Hallman says the rules are part of why she chose to run as a write-in rather than wait. Because seats can be won outright in July, she has said a write-in vote in this election is not a wasted vote. Her vision and why she's running. Hallman says Santan Valley has outgrown its identity as a bedroom community and needs a general plan that brings in commercial and industrial development so residents can work, shop, and find entertainment closer to home instead of driving to neighboring cities. She points to the area's rapid growth and changing population and says the goal should be a community people are proud to call home without erasing its longtime rural and ranch character. Asked what she would tell a voter deciding whether to write her in, Hallman said, "I'm not campaigning for a job. I'm not campaigning for control. I'm campaigning to be your councilwoman that is approachable, that always has a smile, that will shake your hand and sit down and talk with you." She added that she would not make promises she could not keep. Quote, "I will not make empty promises. I cannot and I will not," end quote. Hallman says she is not backed by developers or organized groups and is funding the effort herself. Her campaign website is DonnaHallman4STV.com. How to vote, including for a write-in. Write-in candidates are not listed by name on the ballot. To vote for one, a voter writes the candidate's name in the write-in space provided. The name does not have to be spelled perfectly. It only needs to be clear enough for election officials to identify the candidate. Early voting is already underway. It began June 24th, and mail-in ballots have been sent to registered voters. Election day is Tuesday, July 21st, 2026, with polls open from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. Voters can cast a ballot in person or drop off a completed early ballot at these locations: Santan Valley Recorder's Office, 31505 North Schneff Road, Building A, Santan Valley, 85143, in-person early voting and a ballot drop box. Santan Valley County Health Department, 36235 North Gansel Road, Santan Valley, 85140, ballot drop box only. Voters who are unsure of their Election Day polling place can look it up by address at my.arizona.vote/where-to-vote.aspx. End of story. Our next article is entitled Sheila E. to headline Florence Freedom Fest, July 4th. This was posted on Pinal County News, SantanValley.com, June 25th, 2026, no author is listed. Grammy-winning percussionist Sheila E. will headline the town of Florence's Freedom Fest 2026, a free 4th of July celebration with live music, food, family activities, and what the town calls its biggest fireworks show yet. Geographic reference: the event runs Saturday, July 4th from 5 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at the Florence Multipurpose Field and Aquatic Center, 174 West 1st Street. Admission is free. Florence is a short drive south of the Santan Valley area, and the lineup carries several local and regional ties. Sheila E. takes the stage at 7:30 p.m. The singer, songwriter, and drummer is known for the hits, quote, "The Glamorous Life," end quote, and, quote, "A Love Bazaar," end quote, and for work alongside Prince, Ringo Starr, Beyoncé, Gloria Estefan, Marvin Gaye, and Lionel Richie. Her set caps an evening built around the celebration of America's 250th anniversary. A lineup with roots. Before the headliner, the stage leans regional. Honey Girl, a Queen Creek-based country act led by singer-songwriter Kira Brown, performs at 6:15 p.m. The band includes Scotty Johnson of the Grammy-nominated Arizona group Gin Blossoms. Opening the night at 5 p.m. are a national anthem performance by Evelyn Arante and the Blindsiders, a cover band from the Florence and Queen Creek area. Florence Copper, the operation next door that draws much of its workforce from the larger Santan Valley area, is the presenting sponsor and will deliver a message at 7 p.m. after remarks and a proclamation from Florence Mayor Keith Eaton. The entertainment schedule is as follows: 5 p.m. National Anthem by Evelyn Arante. 5 p.m. The Blindsiders. 5:45 p.m., You're Behind BBQ Rib Eating Contest. 6:15 p.m., Honey Girl. 7 p.m., Mayor's Remarks, Proclamation, and Florence Copper Sponsor Message. 7:30 p.m., Headliner Sheila E. 9:15 p.m., Fireworks Show. More than music, music and audio, the celebration runs well beyond the concert. Attractions for all ages include water slides, a 45-foot-long water obstacle course, sports inflatables, giant lawn games, a 9-hole mini golf, a Stars and Stripes sand art experience, and a remote control car course called Full Throttle RC Raceway. A toddler soft play zone is set aside for children up to age 4, and face painting and balloon animals will be near the vendor area. The Florence Aquatic Center will be open from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. with free admission so guests can swim during the day and watch the fireworks from the pool. Food vendors include Chef on the Go, Santan Hot Dogs and Doc's Dogs, Sunshine Funnel Cake, Maui Wowie Smoothies, Snowy Town, Cutie's Lemonade, Coppercorn, and Utter Delights. What to know before you go. Parking will be available at several spots, including Jason Lopez Memorial Park, formerly Heritage Park, the Florence Community Center and Aquatic Center, the dirt lot southwest of the community center, downtown Florence side streets, and Town Hall for overflow. Attendees are encouraged to bring chairs or blankets. Complimentary water will be available. Canopies are allowed in designated areas but must come down by sunset. Weapons, personal fireworks, glass containers, and illegal substances are prohibited, and pets are not allowed except for trained service animals. End of story. Our next article is entitled Celebrate America's 250th at the Queen Creek Rec and Aquatic Center. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, June 9th, 2026. No author is listed. Celebrate Independence Day and America's 250th birthday with Queen Creek Parks and Recreation's 4th of July Splash Bash. Enjoy a variety of games and activities, including tie-dyeing, water balloons, lazy river bingo, and water volleyball. Friendly competitions and activities will be available for all ages, whether relaxing in the water or joining in the fun. Participants must bring their own item to tie-dye, limit one per participant. Center members get free admission, and residents and their guests can purchase a day pass. The 4th of July Splash Bash runs from noon to 4 p.m. July 4th at the Queen Creek Recreation and Aquatic Center, 22343 East Ryan Road. End of story. Our next article is entitled Queen Creek Council Candidate Forum Focuses on Roads, Parks, and Housing. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, June 29, 2026, and written by Janet Perez. Roads, parks, and affordable housing options dominated the discussion during a recent forum for candidates running for the Queen Creek Town Council. The June 23rd forum, sponsored by the Queen Creek Chamber of Commerce and the Queen Creek Independent, featured 4 of the 5 candidates running for the 3 open seats on the council. Early voting for the July 21st primary is underway. Incumbents Brian McClure and Don Oliphant, along with challengers Benjamin Harrison and Nick Massey, attended the forum. Incumbent Travis Padilla could not attend, but a pre-taped video message from him was shown at the top of the forum. Padilla's video got the debate rolling as he discussed the need to continue building not just local roads, but also being involved in the process of creating regional thoroughfares. Quote, "It's very important to me that we continue to work on these intersections and creating additional lanes and turning lanes wherever we can to help you have as little traffic as possible," end quote, Padilla said in his video. With roads seeming to be a perpetual problem in Queen Creek, expanding the town's transportation infrastructure drew consensus from all candidates. As McClure and Oliphant pointed out, the town's roads are burdened less by residents and more by pass-through traffic from places such as Santan Valley. They advocated continued cooperation with regional partners for projects such as State Route 24 and the Pinal Parkway. "Over the last 10 years, we have spent over $250 million on our roads," Oliphant said. "I know we think sometimes they do all the roads at the same time. Well, They only have certain times of the year that they can work on certain projects. And if we have to work with SRP, if we have to work with the railroad, we have to work on their schedule. And so sometimes the timing isn't our favorite, but it's when we can get the project done. Massey said he hopes Santan Valley's recent incorporation will lead to better regional coordination to get road projects going faster. Like the other candidates, Harrison also said roads are a priority, but he said the town must do long-term strategic planning. Affordable housing is a problem all communities are reckoning with, and the Queen Creek is no exception. The candidates at the forum concurred that there's a dearth of mid-range housing that is accessible to young adults and seniors. However, the candidates differed on how involved town government should be in addressing the problem. We need to actively recruit those developers coming to our town so that space can be created, because right now it's either $600,000 for a house or $2,000 to $3,000 a month for an apartment. And there's no middle ground, Harrison said. Massey said he is against apartments being built in established subdivisions. He thinks condos would be a fitting addition to downtown or on the outskirts of town. McClure said he favors a free market approach because developers will build to demand. If there's a market for condos downtown, then they will be built because we're not holding them back from looking at what people need, McClure said, adding that the plan has been to have lower density housing in the southern part of the town and higher density in the northern part that is closer to employment centers. Oliphant said that while she sees the need for townhomes and condos, the town government cannot tell property owners what to build if it falls within the general plan. We can't say, no more, stop building. That's not realistic to do that, but if we have a say in what product they bring here, I think that's a pretty important thing, and that's pretty powerful because we hear from a lot of residents that maybe the townhomes and the condos are a little bit more affordable, she said. Padilla also kicked off on a debate on parks and recreation. The town spent millions of dollars over the past year building Frontier Family Park, the Recreation and Aquatic Center, and expanding Mansell Carter Oasis Park. Padilla has consistently voted against new park projects and said in his video that the town is spending too much on parks and recreation. We spend nearly $20 million annually on parks and maintenance fees. This is something that I would like to see reduced. It's too much money for us, and we need to stay within the proper role of government, Padilla said. The candidates at the forum were united in saying the town needs to provide recreation space for residents, but differed on how to pay for it. You want growth to pay for growth, and you want the residents that are coming in to be able to pay for the amenities that they're using, Oliphant said. You don't want that burden to be on all the taxpayers that are already here. McClure echoed the growth pays for growth idea and added that he looks for creative ideas and that we can generate more revenue through parks themselves. Thanks to the new Queen Creek Recreation and Aquatic Center, the Parks and Recreation Department has been adding more programming, but Harrison and Massey say more could be done. It's not just building a facility. That's the end of our story for today. Thanks for joining us on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for more programs coming up.